We'll call the meeting of the House Agriculture and Rural Development Committee meeting to order. We have a full agenda for the day. We have a very important bill to start off with, an Erdahl bill, and then we're going to have a report by the Ag Nutrient Task Force. And then we will start to hear House File 3441, the junkie bill that relates to the Ag Nutrient Task Force. So that's what we're looking at today. As soon as we have a quorum, we will officially call a meeting to order, but it is 2:30 p.m. on a Wednesday. That means we're having a meeting.
Full moon.
Full moon. Yes. Okay, so with that being said, if Representative Erdahl could please come to the table to introduce his bill. And I've got a few questions for members of the audience before we start. Whether folks are for or against House File 2879, I realize that some folks have to go, and I know they travel some distance. I want them to be able to get their testimony on the record. So if we do end up going out of order with people for or against the bill, that's the way it'll be today, because I grew up on a dairy farm, and I know when it's time to milk the cows, you milk the cows. So some folks will have to be going probably before the meeting is finished. So we'll try to work with the schedule. So if we're out of order a little bit, that would be nothing new. Okay, so that being said, Representative Erdahl will move his bill when we have a quorum. Representative Erdahl, if you could please present your bill. And then there was, I believe, a Mr. Fitter, farmer from Litchfield, that we'll have on. Now, first of all, is there anyone in the audience that needs to get on the docket early on this bill so that they can take off? Okay, so we have another. So we'll go, Mr. Fitter, to the gentleman in the
that maroon shirt.
Very nice shirt. Farmers Union. Okay, very nice. Okay, so that, Representative Erdahl, if you could please present House File 2879. And again, members, when we do have a quorum, we will interrupt wherever we're at to get the meeting officially started. So with that being said, Representative Erdahl, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Pleasure to be here today with this bill and see so many people here interested in trying to help out dairy in Minnesota. The industry has had some problems. It's been in decline for quite a few years. Now, dairy impacts the Minnesota economy at the rate of $11 billion annually. Dairy production ranks number 3 in agricultural cash receipts, or about 16% of Minnesota's total agricultural cash receipts. The impact of dairy is felt elsewhere in Minnesota agriculture and its economy. Dairy cows are very friendly environmentally. Without dairy cows, lands would most likely be put into traditional row crops that have erosion control issues. Dairy cows in Minnesota consume 60 million bushels of corn, 545,000 tons of corn silage, 2.45 tons of hay, and 400,000 tons of protein supplements. Each 1,000 cows within a community contribute approximately $2,694,000 in farm income and employs 12 people. But Minnesota dairy is at a crossroads. This industry, which supports over 50,000 jobs directly or indirectly, is in trouble. Our share of national milk production has dropped from 7% in 1980 to 5% in 2003. We now have about 5,400 dairy farms and 450,000 cows. We've lost about 400,000 cows since 1970 and over 40,000 dairies. Now, the investment tax credit for dairy will not solve all the problems, but it will be a step in the right direction. This legislation would create a non-refundable credit against the individual income tax or corporate franchise tax equal to 10% of the first 500,000 of qualifying dairy investments. I'd like to thank Governor Pawlenty for stepping forward and leading the way by aggressively working to see that this bill passes, and by having the foresight to place it as an initiative in a supplemental budget. Now, the dairy farmer has a six-year window in which to make a modernizing improvement to his dairy. He or she may receive credits on the tax liability for the next 15 years or until 10% of the investment has been granted. It is estimated that 2,200 farms, or about 40% of dairy farmers, will take advantage of this opportunity in the first year. Wisconsin is currently in the second year of a similar program, and our fiscal note is based on their results. This program will be used in Minnesota, and it will have a positive impact. It will help our farmers to modernize and compete with other states. If we do not reverse declining trends by 2010, we will likely lose another 100,000 cows, representing nearly $14,000 per cow in economic activity annually for the state. Each cow, in a study from the 1990s, accounted for $604 in state and local taxes. In Wisconsin, a more recent study showed cows accounted for $512. Yes, Mr. Chairman, even Minnesota cows are overtaxed. We need to get this done to help a struggling industry and allow us to compete with our neighbors and other states. It does not end the problem, but it could help to stop the bleeding and get the industry moving ahead again. Now, this proposal has wide support among farm groups and stakeholders. It has a track record in Wisconsin, and it will help to right Minnesota dairy. This will help our farmers to modernize and make changes needed to compete in the marketplace. I'd like to thank the dairy farmers who came here today. You worked hard. You did a tremendous job. You weren't able to give the girls the night off so you could stay here later. The state of Minnesota must recognize how important you are to our economy, our environment, and the health of our people. And so thank you for coming here today.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl, and I'd like to call Mr. Dan Fitter, a farmer from Litchfield, to give his testimony. And I'm kind of thirsty. Is there any milk?
Cheese, milk.
I saw a cooler out there. Oh, well.
I tried.
That's a good offer would have had milk here.
Yeah. A good offer would have had milk here. And Representative Erdahl, to support your bill, I was listening to public radio this morning, and they said that chocolate milk is better for athletes and their stamina than Gatorade. That was on the news. It was on the radio this morning, so it must be true.
Mr. Chairman, first, I don't have the milk and cheese, but I'm just a little late on requesting it. But, however, I have a calendar to pass around.
One for each of us?
No, just one. You just look at the pictures.
Okay. Okay, members. I better get this thing back under control. Okay. Members, we'll officially call the meeting of the House Agriculture and Rural Development Committee to order March 15th, 2:30 p.m. Representative Conan, after having thoroughly read the minutes, would move the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Now, before we get into the testimony, Mr. Fitter, I would like to ask if there's anyone in the audience that wishes to testify against House File 2879. Okay, then we'll go through the testifiers, and then we'll have questions, and there is one amendment that we will discuss, and then we will get into the Ag Nutrient Task Force. So, Mr. Fitter, welcome to the committee, sir, and if you could please present your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Dan Fitter. I am here before you today to ask you to support the Dairy Investment Tax Credit authorized by Representative Dean Erdahl. I own and operate a 40-cow dairy near Litchfield. My farm was established in 1913. My family purchased the farm in 1946. I have owned and operated the farm since 1990. It is within shoreland of Lake Minnebell. This is a traditional tie stall milking system with loafing barn and seasonal pastures. I have improved my dairy over time. I currently utilize 75 acres of pasture surrounding the site. In the late 1980s, I fenced the cows out of an existing waterway, converted high sloping land to pasture, and installed a terrace on the upslope end of the pasture. These measures dramatically reduced and eliminated erosion and surface water impacts. In 1991, I installed a clay-lined lagoon for 6 months of manure storage and runoff controls. I would like to begin dirt work in the spring of 2006, assuming all permits have been obtained. The dirt work includes expansion of the current manure basin to 100 feet by 120 feet A HDPE plastic liner will also be added to the basin. The 60 by 154 foot loafing barn will be improved to produce a compost bed pack barn with feeding apron. This barn will be raised 4 feet on a cement wall to allow for the compost site and shifted to the north approximately 10 feet. A second compost bed pack loafing barn, 60 by 150 feet with feeding apron, will be constructed directly to the east of the first barn during the second phase of the expansion. The existing barn will be converted from the current tie stall barn to a milking parlor, maternity pens, holding area, and baby calf area. The expansion and modernization will result in the following. Save my back and knees so I can continue milking cows. Allow me to milk more cows with my own labor. Improve cow comfort utilizing the compost bed pack. And reduce environmental risk factors deteriorating lagoon liner by replacing it with the HDPE liner. The current project estimate is $350,000. This is an increase of approximately $25,000 in materials and labor since the summer of 2005. This bill as is laid out is a very good for a person in my situation because I can carry the tax liability forward 15 years. While I hope I would have a tax liability in the first year of my reinvestment, as with most businesses making major reinvestment, it will most likely not happen. Allowing me and other dairy producers an opportunity to carry the credit forward allows us to maximize the incentive the state would be providing. In my case, the tax credit is particularly welcome. You see, I have been trying to get my county conditional use permit to build for over 7 months. In that time, the cost of my project has increased approximately $25,000. And I'd like all of you to see the handout that was passed out. As you can see, the permitting process has been a very long one. In closing, I would like to say that passage of the dairy investment tax credit is crucial to me personally and many other dairy producers in achieving our goals as small business owners. Passage of the tax credit bill says to me and other dairy farmers that the state does support us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to share my thoughts with you. I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Fitter. You say you got a 40-cow herd now. What are you looking at going to?
Approximately 140 milking cows.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Fitter? Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to publicly thank you. I mean, I'm looking at this timeline and your work, your efforts, your persistence, it's amazing. And it's amazing that it takes this long to get this done. And it's sad that it takes this long. But I want to thank you for having the willpower to stay with it and do it and to add cows to the state, add jobs to the state. We need a lot more like you, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any other questions? Representative Hennis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment, I see on here currently out-of-pocket expenses is $47,000. This is absolutely ridiculous for an environmental review and getting you up and running.
Here, here, here.
You got some thank milk you. In the cooler there. It does taste better than Gatorade, too. But okay, thank you so much, sir. Thanks for coming to testify today. This is a very important bill, and I appreciate your testimony. Now, we had a gentleman that would like to come down, or a couple gentlemen. From Sleepy Eye?
Really?
I thought we had a rule. Here we have Mr. Peterson from the Farmers Union. If you'd like to introduce the next testifier.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Peterson. I'm with the Minnesota Farmers Union. I just want to speak real briefly and then introduce him if I could. I want to wear two hats real quickly. This last past year, I was appointed by Commissioner Hugesson, too, to serve as chairman of the State Organic Farming Task Force. And just something I picked up, it's not something a lot of our farmers are doing in the state. It's about 100 dairy farmers, and if we have, 5,500 dairy farmers, maybe a little less than that. It's not a big percentage, but the important thing is in that area there is growth. We do see that number increasing. In fact, Organic Valley, who is the main dairy supplier in the state, I understand, has lost or canceled their contract with Walmart until they can fulfill because they cannot meet the demand. So that there is a lot of farmers transitioning into organic, and obviously this bill helps those farmers who are needing to make upgrades. So hope you consider that. And then with that being said, with Farmers Union, I won't take a lot of your time because you're going to hear the similar testimony today from just about everybody, that we have been long supporters of this dairy credit. We've testified in favor of it many times and feel that this bill sends the right message to our dairy farmers in the state. It also, I think, does help all-size farmers, and especially people who work off-farm and have income tax and pay income tax. You know, just to think about that, too. And the great thing about being at the Capitol here is we have a lobby day today, and I just happen to have a dairy farmer who came down today. And what I like about him is he's chosen to continue to dairy farm and pick up his farm here in the last couple of years. So I'd like to introduce Mr. Ken Goldbrush from Sleepy Eye for just a few comments.
Welcome, Mr. Goldbrush, to the committee. Ken Goldbrush, dairy farmer from Sleepy Eye. Please present your testimony, sir.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Kenny Goldbrush. I live in Sleepy Eye, Brown County. I milked 37 cows. I took over the farm when my dad passed away about 2 years ago. I thank the committee for their interest in the bill and urge support. I would, you know, it'd be a good bill to for projects that I could improve on my farm, like laying some cement in the yard and other stuff, the projects. And but we, you know, 10% tax credit, you know, investment credit is good, but what you really need to work on is getting better price for farmers. And you know, you should work, you know, with maybe like Kraft and Oak Grove and farmers and milk producers to try to get a better price and not, you know, screw the farmer over like they've been for the last 30 years. You know, so
sir, we don't use that kind of language. Stay up. Should not treat them fairly.
Yeah, treat them fairly.
Is what he meant to say. So
kind of like with the campaign practices.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's different. I'm sorry, sir.
I just gonna like thank the committee for the for interest in the bill.
No, thank you, and you're. I think you've got unanimous support for a higher dairy price here. I think that's anything we can do to support that, we'll be there. So any questions for Mr. For Ken here? Or for Tom? Thanks a lot, Ken. Okay, now we'll go back up to the top of the list, and we'll go to Mr. Jim Borboom, and then we'll go right down the list, and then when we have the amendment, there may be some folks who wish to testify for or against the amendment. So generally in a committee that I chair, when everybody's for it, we want to get everybody who can that's on the list on the record, but we take the Reader's Digest condensed version. Please state your name and who represents for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Borboom, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. You will get a very brief, condensed version. House File 2879 provides an investment credit for dairy farmers in the state of Minnesota. I'm pleased to mention to the day, and as Representative Erdahl has mentioned, that this is a governor's initiative. The governor announced this initiative back in December of 2005 at the Midwest Dairy Expo in St. Cloud. And the concept of a dairy investment credit was originally proposed by the dairy, the governor's livestock task force in the 2004 report. I think you'll hear a lot of testimony today about the value of this credit to the dairy producers, so I don't need to go through that. And I know Representative Erdahl has covered the provisions of the bill, but I would echo that the state of Wisconsin passed this exact same legislation in 2004. And as of 2005, 40% of the dairy farmers in the state of Wisconsin took advantage or utilized this credit. And the average credit claim by the Wisconsin dairy farmers was $1,890, so that's not a very large amount. But it was interesting to see the level of participation at 40%. This bill would be administered by the Department of Revenue, even though we worked with the Department of Revenue in putting together the fiscal estimate of the note. As Representative Erdahl mentioned, the dairy industry in Minnesota certainly has a significant economic impact. It provides about $3.1 billion in economic activity and employs more than 27,000 jobs. And I'd like to just add or close by saying, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we greatly appreciate the support that you had on a similar initiative last year, and again ask for your support for this bill in this session. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Beerbohm. And here we are again. We had the bill passed last year. I think it was unanimous out of this committee, and you know the story of what happened to it. And my only concern right now is that do we have a tax bill? That's what we have to work on, because there's some very important initiatives that need to go through. So that's a discussion for another day. Thank you, Mr. Beerbohm. Mr. Paul Sobosinski, Land Stewardship Project, if you could please come forward. And looks like he's bringing down a very important person from southeast Minnesota. So, Mr. Sobosinski, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to testify on behalf of the Land Stewardship Project. Pleased to be here to represent the policy program of the Land Stewardship Project. I'm also a farmer myself in southwestern Minnesota and raise pigs. I'm just going to make this available for distribution to the committee. It's a piece that Dan will be referring to a little bit later. On behalf of the Land Stewardship Project, we wholeheartedly support Representative Erdahl's bill, House File 2879, moving forward. It's part of a package, part of a piece that we've been supporting. We came together with other farm organizations back in 2004, initiated a report together with Minnesota Farmers Union, Sustainable Farming Association in Minnesota, and the Minnesota National Farmers Organizations. And one of the provisions that we supported was this bill moving forward for a 10% tax investment tax credit. We also had the piece in there that we wanted to see this bill also carry forward provisions for pasture development and on-farm processing. In terms of on-farm processing, we look at that as being value-added. And in terms of pasture development, we look at that as an opportunity for producers who choose to do this, allowing them to compete in a different way, being low-cost producers, addressing part of the price-income squeeze that the dairy industry currently finds itself in. I think one piece that I'd like to just say in regards to pasture development, as you look at the amendment that's before you today, is that realize with dairy farmers that's part of their infrastructure. Without any further to do, I'll let Dan go forward and testify on our behalf.
Okay, thank you. If you please state your name for the record and who you represent, please, sir.
Dan Miller, farmer from Spring Valley, Minnesota.
Welcome to committee, Dan.
And I'm here basically to support the initiative. I think it's an excellent initiative to help spur reinvestment in dairy, which is definitely needed. Give you a little my background. I was an extension agent in Wisconsin and also in Minnesota, and for 16 years taught farm management through the Minscu system. We farm in Fillmore County, about 600 acres, do about 100 dairy heifers, 100 purebred Angus cattle, and I've had the privilege of working with well over 200 farmers over the last few years, dairy farmers of all sorts, of all sizes, of all types. And I do think this will help spur reinvestment in dairy infrastructure, which has definitely been waning in the last few years. Just wanted to talk to the issue of including the pasture and also on-farm processing in it. Of course, pasture, I think, as most of us know, is really that the grazers or the grass-based areas, freestall barns, so to speak. Certainly, I'm not comparing conventional to grazing, although I just want to make the point that the grass-based areas, I think, are increasing, like Mr. Peterson previously mentioned, with the organic growth. I just brought a publication here, Pastures of Plenty, which cites an 8-year study that the University of Wisconsin did, which indicated a $1.57 a hundredweight lower cost of production for grass-based dairies in Wisconsin. That would translate to about $31,000 for 100 cow dairy operation. We need all of the dairies we can have, and we need all the reinvestment that we can muster. But I just wanted to add that we want to include the grazing opportunities. It's also a great way for young beginning farmers to get into the industry without investing quite as much in capital upfront costs. The other thing that I was going to mention is the on-farm processing. I've had the pleasure of working with, well, one farm in particular just this last year that started direct marketing milk and bottling milk, and that's going well. Something like this could be a real plus to that operation for that added value enterprise of further processing the milk, too, I think. as far as the cost of production, I'm just going to cite from 2004 the University of Minnesota Center for Dairy or for farm financial management, cost of production about $13.74. That's from 2004. The 2005 numbers will be out in about 3 weeks. Just yesterday, last night, I printed off the Chicago Mercantile milk futures, and if you adjust for basis, the cost of or the price that's probably going to be out there in the next 2 years, next 24 months, is projected to be about $13.75. So the cost of production is going to be quite close to the opportunity price that is going to be out there. So I think low cost producers are going to win, are going to be positioned to survive. And I think this initiative will be a good positive influence in that effort.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Any questions for Mr. Miller? Mr. Solosinski, Representative Heigerken.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for your testimony, Dan. And it would be remiss for you to leave without mentioning that within the audience we have the Stock Center Creamery, Marv Hinnenkamp over there, and he just told me this morning that they are selling milk now to California. But it's really taken off well. So it's good. It's good to see that we're all aboard on this important issue. And something that Representative Erdahl has not brought up, and I want to make sure it's important. When I went on the dairy tour with the Department of Ag here a couple years ago, Representative Blaine was with me, and I think Representative Junkie, we had the President of Corn Growers Association and the President of Soybean Association, Representative Magnus. And I was wondering what their interests were, and I believe me, they gave me an earful. They told me how important livestock is to their industries. Without livestock, and we can go on, and we can go to the ethanol plants. We need the livestock. So, again, thank you for your good testimony. And, again, I had to bring in the Sox Center Creamery. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Heiger. Any other questions? Mr. Solosinski and Mr. Miller, if you kind of stick around for the amendment, if I start sinking, I may be calling on you. Okay. With that, thank you, Mr. Miller and Mr. Solosinski. We'll... Representative Magnus, do you have a question there?
I do, Mr. Chairman, but I'd like to have Mr. Federer come back up for a minute. But if we got more testifiers, go ahead.
Is Mr. Federer still here?
He had to head back to Litchfield to re-represent, and we can have some questions.
Okay.
He's gone.
Okay. So we'll...
Or if you want. Just wait and we'll
okay.
Come after testifiers.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Magnus. Okay. Mr. Tom Peterson, we talked to from Farmers Union. George Bakeberg, President of Minnesota Milk Producers Association, if you could please come forward.
Still we're short money here.
Mr. Chairman, I think you could use the repair work on one of your chairs here.
if it's one that I sat on, it could be in disrepair. So you might want to change there. I'm not sure. Welcome to committee, sir. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of committees, my name is George Bakeberg. I own and operate a dairy farm at Waverly, Minnesota, with my wife, Kay. and my four children. We milk 85 cows in a test. We are dairy, beef, commodity brokers, soybean corn growers, and we're growing them all with alfalfa. I'm very fortunate to be chosen by my peers in December last year as being president of the Minnesota Milk Producer again. We represent, I say, almost 2,000 dairy producers and 250 associate members. I want to thank Representative Erdahl for his determination to keep pushing this through, Governor Tim Pawlenty for keeping his bill this year, and Chairman Davis for allowing dairy producers another opportunity to share with you this tax credit. It is important that each member of this committee for its support the dairy investment tax credit for this year again. It's been out here for several years. Yes, that is correct. It's been here for several years in the making. Maybe length has a lot to do with perfection. I hope it does. I hope this is the last year we have to come back and testify in front of this committee and for the dairy investment tax. I think your current language is just right. It is simple, direct, and can be a positive impact on every dairy farmer in Minnesota, no matter what size, shape, or form. We represent all of this, and I believe this tax credit will represent all of the dairy industry, the dairy farmers of this state. He's like, this slice of cheddar cheese is too much. As time goes on, it will get better. We go through another session without passing, unless it's for left by the dairy industry that continues to decline. While tax credit is not the silver bullet alone that can save the industry, but it will matter somewhat to every farmer that is out there. Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, Minnesota Milk again, which wholeheartedly supports the dairy investment tax credit, and we urge you to switch passage through the committee and House representatives. Mr. Chairman, or committee members, I'll answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Bakeberg. Any questions for Mr. Bakeberg? Thank you very much, sir. Okay, let's go to Steve from Albany. And I'm going to need some help with your last name. I couldn't read my writing.
You want to switch chairs?
Good man. Slungin.
Where's Albany?
That's
the right side, Freeport.
That was that Wisconsin? Okay. Could you please spell your last name for me?
S-C-H-L-A-N-G-E-N. And it's Schlangen.
Schlangen. Fine. Okay,
depending
thank you, sir.
Where you're from.
Steve Schlangen from Albany. Please present your testimony, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Steve Schlangen, as I said. I'm a dairy producer from Albany, which is right in the heart of Stearns County. I farm with my wife and four children. We milk about 65 cows. I am also serving as a director on the MPI Board of Directors. I'm a member of the MAC Council and a member of the Minnesota Association of Co-ops Dairy Committee. I'm here today representing MAC. A dairy investment tax credit is a top priority for the MAC Dairy Committee. Our work on this effort dates back to 2003 when MAC proposed a dairy investment tax credit for Minnesota following a similar proposal in Wisconsin, which later became law. The dairy investment tax credit proposal has broad support from the ag community and is also a top priority of Minnesota Milk Producers Association and other members of the Dairy Leaders Roundtable. The need for this economic development provision is clear. From 1980 to 2003, Minnesota dairy cow numbers declined by 387,000 head. That's a drop of 45%. Loss of dairy cows also affects dairy feed demand for corn and soybeans, so that these trends not only affect dairy, but all of agriculture and our rural infrastructure. But we can help reverse this trend. In Minnesota, it's estimated that each cow in a 100-cow operation generates over $500 in state and local taxes. And a dollar gain in farm income is estimated to yield a dollar and a half in non-farm income. Any measure we can take to improve investment in our dairy herds, regardless of size, can have a noticeable ripple effect in the economies of our rural communities. It's important to note that investment tax credit is only paid to producers who have a net tax liability. So for most of us don't have to pay taxes because we don't have the income. So that the state would first see substantial taxable income generated before tax credit are actually paid to producers. In addition to helping our, based on the size of our tax of this tax incentive program, it would be well suited for family-sized dairies to update or expand their operations. These are just the types of dairies that have been in the backbone of our rural communities in the past and would continue to stimulate our rural economies for years to come. In addition to helping our dairy industry, MAC also believes it important to toward maintaining a level playing field between Minnesota and surrounding states, especially Wisconsin, as it pertains to dairy. Wisconsin's dairy investment tax credit became law in 2004. Unless a similar proposal is passed here, members of MAC are concerned that such actions puts Minnesota dairy industry at a competitive disadvantage. On behalf of the members of MAC, I would urge Minnesota lawmakers to support an investment tax credit proposal as a measure which could help to ensure survival and growth for the future of our dairy industry and the well-being of our rural communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schlangen. Any questions for Mr. Schlangen? Okay, thank you very much. Have you ever eaten at Charlie's Cafe?
I don't like food there.
Okay. Oh, this is a rough crowd today. A rough crowd. Okay. Mr. Mike Ingelson.
They're honest crowd, though.
Had it coming.
You know, we're very fortunate today. We had Mr. Miller from Spring Valley, and we have Mr. Ingelson from Caledonia. Both cities are in District 31B. But I think Mr. Miller lives in the township, don't you? Yeah, they cut that part out of there, so that goes a different direction. But okay, Mr. Mike Ingelson, farmer from Caledonia, please present your testimony, sir.
Greetings, Greg. Thank you, committee. There is one thing we want to take a minute of interruption, though. We have milk here that is getting warm, and there is no way that milk warm is something that we want to sell. So if there's anybody that would like a milk, please feel free to get up at this stage and walk around and grab one.
And Mr. Chair, it's strawberry, chocolate, and vanilla. There's a lot of flavors in there.
All better than Gatorade.
Let's do it, guys. Yes. It's time to take that break and utilize that. I have got a couple pictures here, so I don't know how that will work, but... First of all, I would like to thank the committee for letting me express my views here.
Overhead.
I'm Mike Ingelson from Caledonia, down in the southeast corner of Minnesota and Houston County. We were fortunate. My wife and Chris and my three children were able to join the dairy operation of my mother and father back in 1979, and we were milking approximately 80 cows back in 1979, and we continued at that number until 1995. In 1995, we took the operation over and basically bought out my father and mother and took the herd from 100 into a course of 400 cows at the present situation over a course of like five different expansions. We went from that 100 to 400, but in 1995, our herd average was at 20,000 pounds, 853. Today, we have those 400 cows basically averaging 30,000 pounds of milk, so we added almost 30% onto that. Back in 1995, my father and I basically operated it, but today we have seven employees and three part-time employees besides myself and my father that have continued. Under that formulation of 10 years of these expansions, I've got, okay, there is a couple of pictures. I guess I wasn't aware of how they were working here. That is a picture of my dairy. Kind of close. We've had two updates since then, but some of the things that we've done to basically reiterate, we've been able to take old facilities and convert them into, we'll call it somewhat modern facilities, and take that production from that 20,000 that we've talked about up into something that looks like this. And if that doesn't look like content and happy cows, I don't know, you know, what we're... Here's another picture. And with that, what I'm trying to reiterate is the possibilities of, I have taken money from the grant, and we've worked up expansion plans, and we are very seriously looking at trying to expand our dairy and take it from the 400 up to possibly the 900, up to possibly even the 1300 because of the picture that, can you have that first picture again, please? I guess there's some reasons right there. There's my mother and my father, and there's myself and my wife, and then my next generation that I feel that we'll be looking at possibly taking this over. But when we talk about farms and family farms, I have three employees that I consider my family anymore, and that's what's making this all special. And with the investment credit that would help us basically and take on and encompass this next venture, that would give us, you know, capabilities of expanding and making it great for possibly four other families that are already working with this operation. The only thing that I would hope that with this investment credit that is out there, I hope we have enough income so we can basically use it. So that's one of the things that I really seriously, you know, I really appreciate the thought that this investment credit will take us into the future by modernizing, updating, making things more efficient, and if that works good, then expansion can be the last big phase of it. Are there any questions, sir?
Any questions for Mr. Engelson? Representative Hamilton.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You said you took your herd from 100 cows to 400 cows. Did you have to go through the same process that this gentleman did here earlier and spend $47,000 for a permit?
Mr. Engelson?
No, sir. It has been very, very pleasant in our county at this stage. There is been a couple issues that have popped up and a couple other permits, so is it possible to change? I will not, but the fear is out there. I mean, there is a lot of people that do, you know, you're asking, you know, me. The fear is out there, and that is a fear that is very much in all dairy people right now that I wish we could, basically, but that's pertaining to the investment credit. So I don't want to get off the table too far here as far as addressing that, Greg, but it's on everyone's mind because they are literally getting scared to take on these issues that have basically been, and they are real, and they've happened in a lot of other counties, but so far we've been very fortunate in Houston County. Thank you.
That will be a discussion that will...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We'll be having at some point here. Mr. Engelson, are you in Sheldon Township or Caledonia?
We are in Caledonia Township.
Caledonia Township, okay. Okay, any other questions for Mr. Engelson? Thank you very much, sir.
The one thing I guess I did want to, just if you don't mind mentioning, the investment that it does take to basically, you know, put on these here larger operations, to start from scratch, you're basically looking at typically $5,000 to $6,000 per cow to basically get these operations up and running. So when we're talking about capital intense, that's what I'm trying to refer to is, you know, literally $5,000 to $6,000.
Thank you very much, sir.
No. Thank you for
is there
time.
Anyone else? I'm through my list, and we'll go to the amendment unless there's anyone else that wishes to testify from the audience. Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead. I have, so Representative Erdahl has moved House File 2879 be recommended pass and sent to the Committee on Ag and Environment, Natural Resources, Finance. Is that correct? Well, like I said, taxes. Probably a better chance going to the other one.
Well, you got it. Take what you can get.
Okay. We'll go to tax committee and we'll encourage the tax chair to have a tax bill. With that being said,
it's on.
Now we're on. Okay.
The magic finger here.
Erdahl shut it off when he shut off the overhead.
Yeah. Wasn't me.
Okay. Again, I'm moving the H2879E2 amendment. Anyone in the audience wish to testify against the amendment? Any discussion from committee members, Representative Junkie?
I guess I'm trying to figure out how it fits in. I see items 1 through 14 here, Representative Erdahl, and 1 through 12. So this credit is available for any one or combination of, is that right?
Yes.
So, Mr. Chair, most of this stuff would go along with a dairy farm. However, just development of pasture is not necessarily correspondingly with a dairy farm. I mean, I could put in pasture and harvest the hay and sell it, have horses, have anything else. So I'm just wondering how this fits into the bill, just as the first read of it. But it seems like we're going off in a little direction that I don't know that we want to in this bill. You could start adding a lot of things, particularly with crop systems. I'm not saying it's bad to develop pasture, but, you know, if it's in coordination with expansion of dairy and putting in new pasture that you didn't have before, again, rotational people change pasture quite often, you know, where you'd plow up one and seed in a new one or, you know. And so, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that fits the way you envision it to, and I think it could be used by people who aren't necessarily dairy folks.
Colby... And Representative Junkie, if you look back on page 1, lines 1.11 through 1.15, would that take care of it? Because it's included under, it has to be acquisition, construction, improvement, building, facilities, acquisition of equipment for dairy, animal housing, confinement, animal feeding, milk production, waste management, Okay. If related to dairy animals in this state, and then 1 through 14.
And again, Mr. Chair, the my response would be, I don't know if it does or not. Related to dairy animals, yeah, I could drill in and develop some pasture and make the hay and say I'm going to sell it for dairy cows. I'm going to sell it to Blaine for his farm, but I don't own the dairy. So is that what you meant to qualify for?
I'm going to call down Mr. Sobosinski, if you could step down for a second and see how you'd envision this. This was an amendment that I've been working with Mr. Sobosinski on and Mr. Miller. Mr. Sobosinski, did you hear Representative Junkie's question?
Yes. The object or the purpose when this amendment was drafted was to make sure that this was targeted as it relates to having being a dairy farmer. So that's my understanding of what the language did when we talked to Colby Sullivan in that regard. And I guess he could probably clarify that probably better than I can.
Mr. Sullivan, any thoughts on?
Mr. Chair, yeah. We did have conversations about adding the pasture development, not exactly how that related to dairy farms, but more how that would be applied relative to the internal tax code reference. That's why if you see on, starting on line 1.8 of the amendment, there's different treatment for the pasture development because it isn't capitalized the same way the others are. But my understanding when the amendment when development of pasture was added is that it would, just like the others, as you pointed out, have to be related to dairy animals in the state.
Representative Junkie?
Well, and again, I think all the equipment, you know, the fences, that's related to dairy. It's your animals that are there, but the pasture isn't necessarily, I mean, I could say it's related to dairy. I'm going to plant it, and I'm going to sell it to Blaine for his cows. Isn't that related to dairy? I'm just trying to tighten it up. If you want to go ahead with this, I don't have a problem with adding pasture. I think somehow you have to tighten up the language and say related to the owners or the producers on farm dairy or something else, because I could. We don't want folks coming in for their seed and fertilizer loans here.
Okay.
David.
At that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, and maybe this goes to House Research or whomever, but in the tax code, both from the county, state, level, whatever it may be, is pasture land identified? What I'm trying to get out here is that if you're talking about harvesting a crop off pasture land and selling them, I mean, wouldn't that be considered production ag land or... I mean, essentially, then what you're saying is you're going to have an alfalfa field, and you're just going to put a fence around it, bale it, sell it to a dairy farm. And that, to me, just, I don't know. I think in tax code, there would have to be some sort of something that would make that different, I guess, because we're talking about a production versus grazing versus pasture. And I don't know. To me, it seems in tax code there should be something that makes that different. But
we'll go to... Mr. Sullivan, any comments on Representative Finstead's?
Mr. Chair, Representative Finstead, I'm not as familiar with the tax code as I am becoming familiar with the ag policy, but I could certainly look into that with some of the income tax and property tax folks in our office and see if those two are distinguished.
To that point, Representative Blaine?
Mr. Chair, I was just, as I look at the amendment and that, and I know what you're trying to do, and I agree with you, but I think, kind of to the point that Representative Junkie made, we may have to somewhere in language address land ownership, because the way this appears to me right now, if I had a neighbor 3 miles away who's retired and has a 60-acre pasture could literally qualify for this, even though he owns no cows, but let's say he rents out his pasture to my other neighbor for raising pasturing heifers during the summer months or whatever like that. I'm not sure if that's what your intent is, but I wonder if maybe if somewhere in your amendment or somewhere along the line here we're going to have to define ownership of property where cattle are owned.
Somehow.
Thank you, Representative Blamer. Representative Johnson at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if I can help here by the insertion of the word dairy in front of pasture on line 1.10. What, does that address the concern brought up?
No.
Or on line 1.6.
It doesn't address ownership.
Okay. Thank you for that. I think if we'll go to Representative Magnus, are you on this point or another point?
It's a point that's relevant probably to this, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Magnus.
In its effect that, you know, we all of us on the committee got this from Mr. Federer and the ordeal he's gone through to get to get permitted for an expansion, and as I understood it, and anyone can correct me, I know he's not here, but he was going to go from about 45 cows to 140 cows, which in my view certainly is not a huge expansion, certainly not city folk would like to think of as a huge corporate farm. And I guess I'm shocked by seeing the $47,000 number on the information we've gotten, and I think that's utterly ridiculous. Right, Dean? It's utterly ridiculous, isn't it?
Utterly.
$47,000 to add 100 cows. It's silly. And my point that I'd like to get to, and I don't know where we fit it in either, but I'd like to see some of this money to get permitted be under the qualifying expenditures in your bill, Representative Erdahl. I don't know how we do that either. So we're in this kind of the same spot with that as we are with the pastures, because if we're going to be facing, if our livestock industry is going to be facing costs like this to do even small expansions, folks, we're in big trouble trying to grow our livestock industry. We are in big trouble, and it's getting bigger every day. And we've got to combat these kind of expenses just to get a small permit.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Representative Erdahl.
I will comment in respect to this particular case that part of the expense is driven up by the fact that he was near a lake. I mean, that's what drove a lot of the cost, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to say that if he's near a lake, that would be covered under the DNR with lakeshore property. And they're working for a salary. And so I don't know. Paper got a lot more expensive. I know we have to build more, roads and bridges and forested land, but that is no reason for $47,000.
And, Mr. Chairman, I will comment that he was within every regulation and rule that the DNR had.
And, Mr. Chair, so then the question becomes, do you have to buy a permit, literally, or being right and a good steward of the land, can you fill out a form that you should get them to say for nothing?
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Hamilton?
Well, I'm just wondering if, I'm just wondering if Representative Erdahl or Mr. Sobosinski would take that as a friendly amendment to include that also, because everybody takes a look at spending $47,000 on 100 dairy cows, and it's utterly ridiculous. We all agree with that. Would you accept that as a friendly amendment? What Representative Magnus is offering up?
We'll come back to that. Let's work. We can't have two amendments at a time, right. So we will come back to that, Representative Hamilton. Your thoughts, Representative Erdahl, to that question.
Well, just, Mr. Chairman, perhaps we should have a session on permitting someday in our within our committee and discuss this and other like concerns.
Okay. Okay, so that's your answer to Representative Hamilton. Representative Ochamba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things dealing with Representative Junkie. First of all, it says it may not include land acquisition. So
right.
That says to me that you can't go out and buy land and use it against a $500,000, because there's also the $500,000 piece in that. And in there, it also says that they are limited to soil preparation, seed costs, planting costs, weed control, and are allowed only once for each acre developed into pasture and only during the qualifying period. So I don't see where there's somebody's going to be out there baling hay and selling it to somebody, because it seems like it's pretty clear in the amendment what pasture and what the costs can be used for. And again, you know, it's a $500,000 investment, and most pastures aren't going to cost $500,000.
Again, Mr. Chair, just to represent Otremba, I think you're missing the point. You could qualify for this on your farm in Todd County right now, and you don't have dairy cows on your farm. You would qualify for that. You could seed in and fertilize land that you own for pasture, and that's what we don't want to happen unless you have dairy cows on your farm. So we just need to simply amend somehow that this is in relation to your on-farm dairy operation. That's all we're looking for.
It appears to me, when I look at it, and I think that's where, if there's any clarification to be done, I think it is pretty clear on the bill itself. The amendment to the bill itself, it says under qualifying experiences, qualifying investment, it's in dairy operations. So, if you know, then I think that's pretty clear. That's dairy farmers. I mean, if you want to tighten it up a little bit, that's where you say it's, you know, it's dairy farmers, period.
I have studied this issue. I have studied this issue thoroughly and come up on my own with an amendment. Had a little help, actually, from some guys lot smarter than I am. Okay, just let me run this by the committee. To amend my amendment, I would move to amend the Davis Amendment as follows. Page 1, line 6, after pasture of the amendment, insert owned. So be pasture owned or rented by the taxpayer for use by dairy animals.
There you go.
Does that tighten her down?
Yep.
Now read it again. Page 1, line 6. After pasture, insert owned or rented by the taxpayer for use by dairy animal. That tightens it up, that it's going right where we want it to go.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Mr. Selvasinski, Mr. Miller, Erdahl, others? Okay, I'm glad I thought of that. Okay, with that, I will move to amend my own amendment, page 1, line 6, after pasture insert owned or rented by the taxpayer for use by dairy animals. Any discussion? Representative Welty?
Yeah, I hate to bring this up to you, but I was just thinking about that. What about then people who are raising heifers? And they have them pasture.
I would say that would be included. They're dairy
animals.
Yeah.
Right. Do you want to go that far, or do we want to limit to just production?
I don't think so, because who testified? Animals.
Okay. Well, I understand that, but I'm wondering if we want to
go that far. Who testified? You do dairy heifers. Yeah. Okay. This one's for you. Okay. Okay, so any other questions on the amendment or comments? I hear none. All fair, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Now I will move the H287A2 amendment as amended. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill, House File 2079, as amended. We want to pass this out. The motion would be to pass to Tax Committee. Any further discussion? Representative Erdahl.
Just a brief final comments. I'd like to thank committee members for the discussion, the support, and also all the people here today. This has been a bipartisan effort that we've worked on for about 3 years. Several members of this committee, Democrats and Republicans, have worked on it. I appreciate that. This bill is fashioned so that it doesn't just help, you know, big guys or anything like that, but small and medium-sized dairy operations could benefit from this. And once again, it doesn't solve all the problems, but it does help us a little bit, I think, to frame the attitude that the state of Minnesota does care about what is happening to the dairy industry and that we are promoting the industry. And when I say the word promote, I have to mention from Litchfield, Minnesota, Bruce Coddington, a great promoter of the dairy industry for many years, is with us today, and wave at us, Bruce. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Blaine.
Mr. Chair, wasn't this bill heard in the tax committee during the interim?
We, Representative Blaine, we had a hearing in, don't tell me the town, Eden Valley. And there was peace in the valley in Eden Valley. Tax committee, Krenke heard this bill in Eden Valley, and we had some great testimony out there. So I'm still going to be visiting with Representative Krenke, and I'm sure you will too, Representative Erdahl and others, to make sure this goes. And it kind of reminds me of Magnus's hat the first day of session. Erdahl, get her done.
Get her done.
Get her done. Okay, with that, Representative Erdahl renews his motion. House file 2079 as amended, be recommended passed and sent to the tax committee. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for your help on this. Okay. Item next, we're going to the report to the state legislature, a recommendation from the Ag Nutrient Task Force, and I believe Representative Blaine and Representative Junkie were the House members on that committee. And I'm going to turn the gavel over to Representative Blaine to run the report. Where's my list?
I see we've got our deputy commissioner from the Department of Ag, Mr. Osnes, and Randy Kramer, who is the chairman for our Ag Nutrient Task Force, here at the table. So, gentlemen, if you'll introduce yourselves for the tape, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Perry Osnes, Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Agriculture. I'm just going to kind of give a little background information regarding the setup of the Ag Nutrient Task Force. Randy Kramer, who chaired it, will walk through the recommendations. But just to refresh all your memories, last year the legislature directed the Commissioner of Agriculture to assemble an Ag Nutrient Task Force to study four topics related to agricultural nutrient issues and make recommendations in those areas. The four areas were looking at the need for additional fertility or nutrient research. The second was just to review the fertilizer tonnage fees that the state collects and how they're used. The third area was to look at the issue of on-farm bulk fertilizer storage, which the department was in the process of working on. And the fourth area that got added in at the end during session was to look at the issue of the use of anhydrous ammonia and the use of that for methamphetamine and what could be done to address that. The legislature directed the Commissioner of Agriculture to appoint 20 members of that task force. As you know, there were four legislators, Representative Junkie, Representative Blaine served on there. I represented the department. The department itself served as kind of the facilitator for these meetings and also helped gather the information to provide to members as well as write the final report. The task force met five times. For the first meeting, Commissioner appointed Randy Kramer to be the interim chair, and then later on, the task force then asked him to chair the entire task force process. So what I'm going to do at this point, Mr. Chair, is just turn the mic over to Randy and let him walk through the recommendations for the committee.
Very good. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Osnes. And Randy Kramer, it's great to have you here. If you'll state your name for the tape and proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Randy Kramer. And members, I'm a farmer from Bird Island, Minnesota. I raise corn, soybeans, sugar beets, and sweet corn in Renville and Candiota counties. I was a member of the Ag Nutrient Task Force representing Farm Bureau and was elected the chair at the first meeting held September 12, 2005. I'm here today to provide an overview of our report. And first, I'd like to give special thanks to several members of the Department of Ag for providing technical support and staff, in particular Greg Bozicki, and I think he's here today, Bruce Montgomery, and Greg Reginball. They did a fantastic job of providing us all the information we asked for, and when I put agenda together, they put it together and mailed it out precisely as we wanted.
We have several members of the task force here today, but other members on the task force, in addition to Senator Dale, Senator Rickman, Representative Junkie, and Representative Blaine, were Dan Benson, representing Minnesota Farmers Union, Larry Muff, who is here today, representing Minnesota Soybean Growers, Paul Gray, Area 2 Potatoes Growers, Douglas Rood, Minnesota Wheat Council, Richard Magnuson, Minnesota Association of Wheat Growers, Alan Peterson, who's also here today in the crowd, Minnesota Irrigator Association, Andy Quinn from the Minnesota Corn Growers, and from the retailer side, it was Robert Chopper from Agri Alliance, Mike Minahan from Watt 1 Farm Service, Robert Zelenka from the Minnesota Grain and Feed, Bill Bond, who is here today, and I think he will be talking on the task force report and representing Minnesota crop retailers. From the soil nutrient consultant side was Dennis Berglund, representing Central Crop Consulting. And from the research side, it was George Ream from the University of Minnesota, and George is also here today. And we had T. Scott Morrell, Potash and Phosphate Institute. And then also on the committee was from the Minnesota Department of Ag, was Perry Osnes, Deputy Commissioner. And I would like to publicly thank each member for their valuable input and time on serving on the task force. We held five meetings, as Deputy Commissioner Osnes said, and they were in duration of 5 hours or longer at each meeting. And so Deputy Commissioner Osnes has described the previously what the task force topics were to cover, and from there I'd like to go into the recommendations as it was related to the research, education, and user feed designation. Number one, it was additional fertility research and associated education is needed for production agriculture to address long-term issues. Additional funding needs to be generated to pay for fertility research and associated education. The fertilizer tonnage fee should be increased to pay for additional fertility research and associated education, and the task force recommends that the fee be set at 40 cents per ton. As part of the council's responsibilities, the council will revisit the amount of fees and make recommendations to the state legislature regarding increases or decreases in the amounts. Due to the long-term nature of research and the need for program continuity, the task force recommends a sunset period of 6 to 10 years. The task force also recommends that the Department of Ag serve as the fiscal agent to collect the fees, distribute the refunds, administer the program. The additional fertilizer tonnage research and education fee must be refundable. With the assistance of the MDA, the council will further address the refund issue. An annual fiscal audit will be conducted on financial aspects of the Ag Fertilizer Research and Education Council, and the report will be available to producers using the Minnesota Soybean Growers method as a model. The council will be comprised of 12 voting members made up from the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers representing the two, Minnesota Corn Growers would have one, Minnesota Soybean Growers one, Sugar Beet Growers one, Minnesota Wheat Growers and Council one, the Minnesota Grain and Feed Association one, the Crop Consultants one, and that position will be appointed by the Commissioner of Ag. Members of the Council will be nominated by the organization and subject to the official appointment by the Commissioner of Agriculture. The Crop Consultant will be appointed directly by the Commissioner. The Council must have a two-thirds vote for funding approval. The official name of the Council will be the Minnesota Agriculture Fertilizer Research and Education Council. Membership on the council will consist of three-year terms with one-third of the membership replacement annually. The council can add ex-officials, non-voting members at their discretion. The council will meet at least once per year, and travel expenses are to be reimbursed by the sponsoring organizations. All research projects that are to be funded are subject through an in-state and out-of-state peer review. Contain a component of outreach and timely dissemination of information to the production agriculture community, and require annual written research reports. Eligible activities include research, education, and technology transfer. Research is the principal purpose of the council. Additional education projects should include a non-education component, and in order to facilitate the collection of fees and refunds, the council should begin in January. Recommendations on the related to the on-farm bulk storage liquid fertilizer. The task force recommends that the legislature review the liability issue as it pertains to on-farm bulk storage of liquid fertilizer, and that ownership of the fertilizer product be a main factor with regard to liability. And the task force also recommends, either through rule or statute, that the on-farm storage of bulk liquid fertilizer be defined as greater than 6,000 gallons per site. Recommendations on the as related to production of methamphetamines. No additional requirements such as tank locking mechanisms, fencing,
or add high dis ammonia additives to address methamphetamine production are recommended. The task force recommends that the legislature encourage other states to pass legislation to restrict the sale of pseudoephedrine. All the recommendations from the task force were discussed thoroughly. In fact, very few, if any, were accepted as presented. Three recommendations in particular were the biggest items of concern to the task force. That was the makeup of the council, the fee amount, the refundability of the checkoff fee. Not all members of the task force supported each of the recommendations. All recommendations were voted on and passed by the majority vote. Concerns were accountability, more government, and an increase in fees coupled with the rising cost of fertilizer and energy. I've talked to many local producers about their thoughts and additional research fee. They all agreed we need more research fee. They all agreed we need more research, but questioned who should pay for it and if now is the right time with an additional increase in cost of production. The producers did not, however, have a problem with the on-farm storage of bulk liquid fertilizers and the recommendations from the task force. Mr. Chairman and members, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kramer. Appreciate your work as leading the task force in our meetings. Members of the committee, any questions for Mr. Kramer or for Deputy Commissioner Osnes? Representative Duncan? Nothing?
Not at this time.
Okay. If there are no questions, I'll have Mr. Bill Bond. I see is on our agenda here. Mr. Bond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bill Bond, representing the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. And our intent really was to comment on the bill following, and so I couldn't add much to what the report was. I just defer to the discussion of the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bond. Is there anyone else in here who is on the task force that that wishes to speak to the report from the commissioner and from Mr. Kramer? If not, then there is a lot of peace in the valley here. You're right. Representative Hennis.
Thank you. I have a question, and it's because I wasn't paying attention. I'm sure that they answered it, so I admit I wasn't paying attention. Is the fee, this research fee, or the fee, going to be kind of based like Wisconsin's where so much for, you know, groundwater, so much for, is it broken up like that? Or is it, you know, go with clean up and, I mean, maybe it's in here and maybe I can read it.
Mr. Chair, to the report, if you look in line 7, or page 7.
Okay.
You'll see the breakdown of fees in other states. And yes, this would be separate. What we'll add to the Minnesota line there then will be a research line, which is not there now currently, where you do see it in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois.
Okay.
They have monies going into research. We do not. So, yes, it will be broken out. So it'll be different from ACRA, and it'll be different from the current tonnage fee that we collect that the department uses internally. So it's actually there'll be three different components to the tonnage fees on fertilizer.
Representative Pennis, I think that's a good point that we do have currently in the statute have a fertilizer fee already that's going to the department for monitoring, cleanup, and that type. But this additional fee would go strictly towards a research. Any other questions? Yes, Representative Pennis.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the other thing, this I think when we originally, when Representative Junkie brought this forward last year, talked about, you know, we talked about weed check off and I don't know what all we check off, but anyway, you brought that forward too. But it is based on them, and that if someone is opposed to that checkoff, they can request it back, which gives them that you know, we're not taking away a freedom here. I like that.
Mr. Chair, yes, and we can go over more of that when the bill is before us, because it's in there. So, and I think that's an important point to make, and I'll make that.
If there's no other comments or questions from members on the report, then I think we'll move along on the agenda, and we will. I will ask Representative Junkie to go to the table, and members, in your packets, you will see a copy of House File 3441. Bill dealing with the Ag Nutrient Task Force and the fertilizer checkoff, and Representative Junkie is the lead author of this legislation. So at this time,
Mr. Chair, I'd move House File 3441 to eventually be recommended to pass and go on to the Committee for Ag and Environment Finance. Although I don't think I want to take a vote today on it, simply because I have been working with some of the task force members. This bill was introduced on Monday, and if you look at the report and the bill, there are some minor technical things, I think, that need to be corrected, and so I am going to work with counsel to put together an amendment to make a number of technical corrections throughout the bill, which hopefully we can do at the next meeting. I know Chairman Davids talked about that last time, that since this is new, everyone should have a chance to look at it and come back with where it's inconsistent with the report in particular. So, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'll go through the bill, hit some of the highlights, and then open it up for questions.
Representative Junkie, before you start, too, I want to reiterate that point that members, we will not be taking a vote on Representative Junkie's bill today, but we do believe that this is a bill that we're going to want to spend some time on and look at carefully. But we want to get started with this, the limited amount of time that we have to meet yet. So if we can at least get a chance to get started on Representative Junkie's bill, and then we will come back to this, I'm sure, at a further hearing date. So at this time, Representative Junkie, take it away.
All right. Members, again, I want to just reiterate this task force, frankly, is how task force should work in the state. We came with a bill last year, as you remember, to kind of move ahead with the checkoff. We morphed it into a task force. We met extensively, as Representative Blaine can attest. And by the way, Heigerk and Blaine are on this bill, too. We added their names. It went in so quick. And they'll show up on later printings of the bill. But we met, we talked, we discussed, we caressed, we debated. We had really, I think, a broad representation from the ag community. I mean, we had growers groups and research, and I mean, it was a good group, members. And when we came out, this task force recommendation was basically sent out unanimously by the groups that were there once we got it put together. There were a lot of arguments and discussion and debate along the way. But, you know, the corn grower, all the other folks got together at the end, and we moved it out in a unanimous fashion. I think it was a real testament to the group we had together, too. So I just want to say that up front. The gist of it, you heard the recommendations, and this bill does put that forth. The first part of the bill, Section 1, pertains to the recommendation for on-farm liquid fertilizer storage. The department, if you're not aware, was coming up with a whole set of rules and regulations based on time of year and based on, you know, amounts there and based on ownership and based on so many things. We sat as a committee and listened to that, and we said, can we make it simpler, like good rural people will do? And we just directed the department, and we would like to put it in statute, which is Section 1 there, really just defines what on-farm liquid commercial storage would be, and it's more than 6,000 gallons. The reason we picked that is because it's more than a tanker load. So I believe a tanker is, what, 4,000, something like that, for you farmers. Hamilton, you must know that. 4,500. So you could get a tanker and a partial load in there. So, you know, if a farmer's using it himself, that would cover it. More than that, then we think you are moving maybe into a commercial end, or where we have to be concerned with some state regs as far as diking and spillage and other things, and the department should become involved. But beyond that, below that or any other time of year, if you're just using this for your on-farm use and planting and farming purposes, we think the department should probably stay off your farm unless you call them and need them there. So this recommendation came from that, to define what that on-farm storage is. So certainly we can take questions on that, but that's the first section. The second section, basically to the end of the bill, relates to what you heard about, discussed by the task force. It basically lays out the membership and how the task force will run. This is modeled off of other checkoffs. This is a checkoff program. Like Representative Penna said, the beauty of this is, and I wish all our state fees and taxes were this way. If you're not satisfied, every year you can get your money back. That's how this checkoff program works. It's not run by us in the state. It's not going to be run by the University of Minnesota. It's going to be run by you and the growers and the citizens of this state. It has nothing to do with any government entity. This board will be a separate entity, totally separate, self-sustaining and self-governing board, just like our other checkoff groups are, although they're commodity-related. This kind of is in that it's fertilizer, but certainly, I think it's set up to be as neutral as possible, to be as user-friendly as possible, and to keep government and other folks out of it. And that was an important part of the discussion as we went along. There was a lot of suspicion when we even inkled that the Department of Agriculture, University of Minnesota, or someone else may have input on this board, because folks really wanted to make sure this was a standalone entity that would move forward in that way. So once a year, the bill basically, when it's done, when it's corrected and when it's amended, will say this will start on January 1st of 2007. The fee will be collected. And the fee, again, it outlines what it's used for here, what the board will be doing. But basically, it's for fertilizer research and fertility research. Members, another part of the discussion, and I think you are all aware of this, that as we talk about clean water and we talk about the clean water legacy bill that's around here, and you talk about environmental stuff, agriculture, it seems every single day we're having to defend ourselves. We're always, it seems, back on our heels nowadays saying, you know, quit pointing your finger at us and quit doing this and stop picking on us. I think the recommendations of this task force and then moved into this bill, what we're trying to say is we're taking a proactive approach for agriculture. When people say, shame on agriculture, you're dumping phosphorus into our lakes and streams, we're going to say, guess what? No, we're not. We have our own group set up. We are researching. We are making smart use of phosphorus. This is an expensive commodity, folks. We don't want to waste it. We all have businesses called farms. We want to make sure we're using the least amount we can, that we're placing it where it'll do the best good, that we're timing it during the year to do the best job for our yields, et cetera, et cetera. And with all that, we're doing the absolute most we can to make sure we're not polluting our waters or streams or anything else in this state. So I think the task force also felt this is a strong, proactive approach for agriculture to take when the fingers start coming at us. Secondarily, I will say there is a need for research, the other thing the task force talked about. Now, again, we can point fingers, and certainly I've got my opinions on research dollars and how they flow through our university and other entities that should be doing this. There's no doubt about it. We had that extension war a few years ago. Our county extension offices are basically shut down. And, you know, that type of research we don't think is being done, particularly with soil fertility. And, in fact, if you're wondering what this will be used for, you can go into the report
on page 9. And we asked university researchers, what do we need to do in Minnesota for research? And they came back to the committee, and you'll see 10 things on there, pretty important things, that they would recommend we get at right away, as soon as we can with this money, and get started. So basically, we do see a need for research, and we want to make sure that's getting done, not only with this money, but hopefully in cooperation with some of the other checkoff dollars and the other groups. The other thing this does, if you've noticed, this brings all these groups into the room together for maybe the first time to actually talk about how they can benefit each other, pool their resources, and move forward in a positive way. This fee, 40 cents, is what it was suggested by the committee per ton of fertilizer. That will average, because I know you're all thinking, what's that mean to the average farmer? The average farmer in the state of Minnesota means 4 cents an acre. Okay? That's what it'll cost. Roughly a dime an acre equals a penny an acre on fertilizer if you take the average use of tonnage across the state. 4 cents an acre. Every good grower in this state that I've talked to since we've had this task force and we've talked about this bill, and I've been with a number of groups, by the way, addressing this bill since we've adjourned the task force, every one of them admit at the price of fertilizer today, by the way, no one's bought fertilizer yet. It's so expensive. They don't buy it in the fall anymore. They're waiting and hoping and praying the price comes down. But everyone agrees we have to make smarter and wiser decisions on that expensive commodity, and that 4 cents will be returned over and over and over and over many times with this research that you see in the report if we can actually accomplish it and move it into these operations. So, I don't think the argument, again, should be the cost to farmers. It's 4 cents an acre. You can calculate how many acres is the average farm and what that will cost you each year. But again, if you're unhappy with the research that's being done, if you're unhappy with the availability of the research, it's going to be reported publicly. It's going to be peer-reviewed. It'll be brought forth to different conferences throughout the year. If you're unhappy with any of that, you can get it back every single year. It's that simple. So, members, I think it's a good way to go about it. The rest of this, again, just lays out really based on kind of the soybean checkoff and others, how this all proceeds, how it gets started, how then we hand it off from the government to the groups. And Mr. Chair, at that, that's kind of the bill. But like I said, when you were out of the room, Representative Davids, I am working with the groups to make sure that the recommendations in the report are translated properly into the bill. And so I do have some technical amendments to work up between now and the next meeting, and then I'll present them at that time. And certainly if members have other comments or questions between now and then, or any other groups that are in the room, we certainly would like to hear those and bring those forward and make any changes you see are needed. Particularly, like I say, once you've read this, all the recommendations, then you're looking and trying to figure out how they fit into the bill.
Thank you. We'll have some questions. We've got a little bit of time here, but I do want to review with the committee kind of what we're looking at before first deadline. And this bill, we might have had you scheduled here incorrectly because we're going to give you on the deadline day, 3/28, we'd work up the bill and vote on it. But does this have to go to GovOps also because it's a board?
That I don't know, Mr.
If it is, we're going to have to move it up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah,
probably does. Doesn't
I guess I'd ask counsel if that's
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, I believe it would have to go to government ops, but I'll check.
Okay. So I think we better kind of just reschedule. I want to go over the committee before we get into some questions, and Representative Hamilton's first on the list. But what we were looking at for our next meeting on the 21st was eminent domain reform, the Johnson bill, possibly Representative Pennis, and then on beef diagnostic pilot project, and we had a Hamilton-Dorman-Seifert bills regarding, oh no, Hamilton was feedlot technical changes. That need to go anyplace else?
I don't believe so.
Okay. And then Dorman and Seifert have a couple bills, and did Magnus have one coming through on that?
Not at this time.
Okay, so
same thing.
Dorman and Seifert, those probably could be moved, so we might need to move Representative Junkies up to the 21st. Eminent domain is going to take some time, and we do have the room until 5:50, so figure we might be there a little bit longer on Tuesday. Then that Wednesday, we've got a Pawlowski bill, nursery stock, consumer education, and then we're going to have the Office of Legislative auditor's report on the MDA pesticide program, and we'll hear from Jody Howard, Joe Voss, and then we'll have the department, Hugesson or his assignee, to go over the report with us. We're going to listen to the report. And then we have a, I had a well T-bill down, but that might need to be moved. Let's see here. Ellison, pesticide application notification, junkie beekeeping laws repealed. That would be on the Wednesday. And then, Representative Welty, does your bill need to go anywhere else besides here, right to the floor? Okay, because if there's other stops some of these bills have to make, we need to get them up quicker. So we'll work on that. That's why I get paid the big bucks. We'll figure that out. Now, if there's any other bills that members of the committee are looking at, or you don't have to be a member of the committee, but anybody else, but this is kind of what we have right now. And then, of course, after the first deadline, we'll get the Senate files coming over that they've worked on. So I'm thinking, Representative Junkie, we better be doing this pretty quick. The reason I didn't want to vote on today was because I had promised various groups that they can look at it quicker and talk to you and visit. And so this bill may be up on the 21st after eminent domain, and then we may move Hamilton, Dorman, Seifert down. We'll just see how kind of that goes. Okay, some questions for a few minutes here before we join. I just want the committee to kind of know where we're headed on these bills. If I'm missing anything, let me know after the meeting, please, or any time in the next few days. Representative Hamilton, to the House File 3441.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Junkie, we talked about this earlier. There are many farms that sell manure as fertilizer. That's not included in this. That's not your intention. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, there is no manure. This is only the commercial grades, NPK, sulfur, you know. No organic fertilizers like manure, no.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you.
Representative Tremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 2.33, you talk about refund requests received within 60 days. My opinion is that if we're in the middle of planting and 60 days really isn't enough time.
I can answer your question, Representative Tremba. That is one of those technical corrections, Mr. Chair. What the committee recommended was, again, you're right, for a farm operation in particular, what we would do is give a 60-day period for refund, probably starting January 1st through March 1st. So that would be the period every year that you would apply for your refund in the winter when you're not doing the farming. That was a good catch. That's one of those technical corrections that I'm going to work on to make sure that it's a specific period every year. So everyone knows, okay, you know, right at first of the year, I got to do the refund check if I want to. And that's, I think, how most groups do it, too. There's a certain period that you can apply for your refunds on the checkoffs.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. And Representative Jumke, yeah, a lot of them say a year, so whatever. But I just thought that that wasn't an appropriate time.
We will correct that for you.
Any other questions? Representative Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Jumke, saved me some work and explained to me. You said you were working on an amendment to clarify some things with the bill, and you had... Unless I misunderstood you, you said there were some things in the bill now that were differing from the task force report. Can you go over those with us here?
Yep, I can. A couple minutes, just some of the things that we're doing, Representative Blaine, and to the bill, page 2, line 2.5. There were some under the crop consultant, it says appointed by the commissioner, but what's not in there, it said, and the task force said it should be nominated by CCA, the Crop Consultant Association, or the independent crop consultants in the state should make the nomination and then be appointed by the commissioner. So we're going to change that they're making the nomination, the commissioner isn't picking the person. So that was one thing. The line 2.6, council members may serve only 1 3-year term. I don't think we ever said that. We just said they will serve 3-year terms. So we are going to take that only out and not make that. That'll be up to the board, again, if you can serve concurrent terms or whatever. We're not going to say that. The board will decide that in the future. So that's a correction we have to make. Again, going down 2.9 and 2.10, we'll again reference that crop consultant from above and how it's appointed. Line 2.18, I think we're going to strike after the period, the council shall serve in an advisory role with. That'll all be stricken, and then it'll start with a capital T on the next line. The department.
will be acting as a fiscal agent, because this council isn't just an advisory role. It is the council that's doing the work. So, again, we'll talk about that, but that was suggested by some of the membership as they read this over. There was a question on 2.21, what the word each business meant, and I suspect, and again to council, there was a question, how do we collect the tonnage fee? And I assume it's going to be collected in the same manner we collect the fees now, and I believe that's probably what Section 17.53 maybe refers to. But we'll have to get that clarified as we go forward, just to make sure that the collection mechanism is exactly the same as it is now. It's no different. They want to make sure that that was clear. Again, you go down to 2.33, that's at 60 days that Representative Tremba just brought up, and we want to make sure it's a date certain, and the task force, I believe, said there will be a window of 60 days to apply, and we believe it should be January and February, or January 1st to March 1st, or something like that. I think there's a typo on 3.6 on the next page, and other plan amendments, it says. I'm guessing that should be plant, P-L-A-N-T, and we'll make that technical correction. And then we want to make sure, it says the sections are effective July 1st. I'm not sure if it says anywhere in here that collections will start January 1st. We just want to make sure that that's in here somewhere and very clear that it doesn't start now or July 1st. It'll start January 1st of next year on a calendar year basis, not on our fiscal year basis. So we're going to have to make that correction, make that clear too, because most farmers are on a calendar year. So those are some of them, Representative Blaine, and I suspect as the group familiarizes themselves with the bill, we may find other small things like that where they're just saying, wait a minute, that isn't quite what we talked about. We meant this, and we will put it in there. Otherwise, I think it's covered fairly well. We have had some first read-throughs, again, by Randy Kramer and some of the other members, and at this point, at least, we've made some catches, and I suspect there'll be a few more over the days. And certainly, like Representative David said, anyone who's got questions or comments or wants to change some verbiage in here to make it clear, we certainly want to work with them over the next couple of days. So they should get into my office, and we can work that out.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Magnus?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Junkie, how much approximately do you anticipate they would raise a year?
Good point. I should have mentioned that. Mr. Chair and Representative Magnus, roughly $800,000 a year, $800,000 to $850,000. So, again, it's not... I will tell you, there were committee members that thought we should raise a lot more for research. It was that important. But we did say, well... And the other thing that's in here, by the way, is a sunset. Again, like everything, if this isn't going to work out, there is a sunset date in here, I believe, 10-year sunset. It's long because you do want to give research a chance and see how the whole system works and that it's functioning. But the sunset's in there. If the group determines, and again, this is our group, our farm groups out there, if they determine that they want more or less on that fee, they can just come to you or me or any legislature. That's the one thing we will be able to, we will have to change for them statutorily is that fee amount every year. So if they, on their recommendation, I assume most of us would go along with their recommendation at the period, but anyone would be able to change that collection fee amount. It's one of the few things that will be left with our purview over the years.
Representative Magnus?
No, that's it. Thank
any
you.
Other questions? If not, if you have questions on bills or scheduling, we're going to try and get everything in. But we do have the rooms later some of the nights, so we will.
Mr. Chair, I know you got about 2 minutes. Just in case there's someone in the room that traveled that would like to speak to the bill before, I don't know if there is or not, that wouldn't be here for the next meeting, but maybe they should have a chance.
Is there anyone here that's not a roadie or a groupie that couldn't make it to the next meeting? Mr. Bond, you're a very distinguished representative of your fine association. If you could bring the gentleman down for a few minutes, we'd appreciate it. Does he meet the 50-mile rule?
Mr. Chairman, he does, in fact.
Okay, thank you very much. If you please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Kevin Doyle. I represent MCPR as the board president. I also work for AgriAlliance. And part of my job in the rural is to support the use and the sale of crop nutrients in southern Minnesota. We've had long discussions on this this process, and we think it's vitally necessary to get more dollars for research for production agriculture today, as agriculture is changing very fast, and we have a lot of issues that we could face as we go forward with water quality and pollution issues. We feel we need to have a source of funds that we can take to the universities or to private industry for more research that benefits the industry and the grower at his level.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Bond, you'll certainly be welcome to, as others that wish to testify for or against the bill. I think we need to go with it on Monday, figure on Monday the 20th. No, I'm sorry, Tuesday the 21st. So Mr. Bond or others that wish to testify, please talk to Chris so we can get you on the list. Anyone else that came from a distance that we need to hear from today for the record? Okay, thank you very much, members, and thank you very much, Representative Junkie. With that, good government all the time. We are adjourned.